Bob Beers joins us. And Bob, I want to get into your story, but we got to talk a little quickly about just this reset and starting all over. When you first heard this plan, and now we're so close to the league restarting next Tuesday with exhibition games, kind of where was your head at thinking as a former player how it'd feel to be inside a bubble?
No idea, to be honest with you, right? I mean, we never had any of this. It's just been so crazy times. It's going to be an adjustment for everybody. I hope that we can get there. It certainly looks like we're heading in the right direction. Numbers are down, so as far as cases go, right? So I think guys are starting to embrace it now as you get closer. At least you get that sense a little bit being around the Bruins right now. I'm sure it's like that with a lot of teams and a lot of players. You're away from your family. That's not going to be easy. But if you make the long run, then I think families are allowed in by the way that I understand it. So, hey, this is unprecedented. I'm glad they're able to do it. I've been pessimistic for a long time. I'm starting to get more optimistic about it, especially when the NHL got the CBA done and really got all the policies in place. So I think guys are embracing it now and doing the right things.
When you look at the Boston Bruins, a little bit older team, although there's some youth, but some of their key guys are a little older. Do you think it's easier for them to kind of get going again after this break because they've been through off seasons before, or is it, the rest helped them? How do you see that playing out for them?
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that theory. In fact, I did an interview with Brad Marchand, during the break, and he felt the younger teams were going to have an advantage, or the teams, with good young legs were going to have that advantage. But just going to practice and watching, I see a guy like Zdeno Chara, and he looks like re-energized, Not that he looks bad. It's just he is 43 years old, but, he looks like he's ready to go. So I don't know what that means when the puck drops and games start, but so far in practices, watching the guys, the majority of them, the ones that are on the ice anyhow, the majority of them look really good, and they look energized and re-energized and ready to do this thing.
Well, let's get into story time. Bob Beers joins us. And Bob, in story times, we take a look at players' careers and kind of how it all came to pass. And it's been amazing. We've had Felix Potvin, Ken Danico, Adrian O'Coin, like all these guys, hockey players, baseball players, football players. It's so fun to hear everyone's journey. Now, I actually didn't know that you were
Kenny Danico's. I know that.
Oh, well, Kenny Danico, this guy is, you know him. He's such a funny guy and such a character.
Exactly.
He's crazy now.
I love hearing his stories.
Oh, the king of New Jersey. He's absolute beauty. Now, first off, Bob, with your name, I mean, guys must have been loving just being around you all the time. Because I remember when I first started playing, I'm like, Bob Beers is the greatest name ever. The guys just always love talking about that when you're playing.
Well, I got made fun of as a kid, right? But as I got older, people loved it. I first started playing in Tampa, and I got traded to Tampa, and that was the first year for the Tampa Bay Lightning. We were in that real small arena. It was the state fairgrounds. So it was before any of the arenas were built down there, and it was like 10,000, 11,000 seats. But, I scored a couple goals as soon as I got down there, so when I would score, they'd have to go buy two beers because my number was two. So it was like a big thing down there, people had a lot of fun with that. So, but when people were mad at me, I heard it. But that's okay. The players all loved it. So, and there was a guy before me named Eddie Beers, right, that played in Calgary.
Okay.
And it was funny because some of the linesmen, I don't think they realized that my first name was Bob. They would call me Eddie. And he played before I was in the league. So I never met him. He went to University of Denver and played in Calgary, I think in St. Louis maybe for a little while. But, yeah, I still had a lot of linesmen, older linesmen that called me Eddie.
It's absolutely classic. Now, I didn't realize you were actually born in Pittsburgh. And in my mind, this might be a little bit naive, but I have a hard time envisioning that Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania was a hockey hotbed. Did you actually grow up there? Or where did you kind of play, your youth hockey, let's say up to 15, 16?
Yeah, I played there till I was about 10 years old. And then we moved to Buffalo, New York. And that's where, I came up kind of through the ranks and ended up playing junior hockey in Buffalo for a team called the Buffalo Junior Sabres. And we played all our games. We weren't, if you compare us to junior A hockey, certainly we didn't compare to that. We would compare to maybe, we played some exhibition games against junior A tier two teams in Canada, I'm talking about. And then we would play against some junior B teams as well. But our league was basically based out of Michigan. So every weekend out of high school, we would have to go to Michigan to play if we weren't playing a home game. There were four other teams in Michigan and us. So, you know, every weekend we were on a bus ride for 5 hours to get to Michigan to play and then come back and, you know, go back to school on Monday, high school on Monday. So it was, you know, it was good. But all the best players, I guess, at that time were concentrated on this one team. If they didn't go to a there was a private high school there called Nichols that some guys went to, but most of the players went to this this Buffalo Junior Saber program, which still exists today.
Yeah, pretty amazing. And then the next year, you moved on to Northern Arizona University. Again, in 85, 86, I wouldn't have thought there would have been a big program there. Why that choice, and what was it like there?
Well, the choice was because it was the only thing I had. the only scholarship offer I had. And it was D1, believe it or not. Do you remember Greg Adams, who went on to play for Vancouver
yes.
for a number of years? So he was there at Northern Arizona. I didn't play with him. He left a year or two before me. But he led the nation in scoring. So they were a D1 program, Division I college hockey program. But I didn't have any real solid offers anywhere else. You know, I had some Division III offers. I guess I'd call myself a late bloomer. So, and then after that year, it was fun year, but there was so much travel to get to any place we were playing. They canceled their program after that season, so it allowed me to transfer. And after that season, I had a number of good offers by some other schools. Had a pretty decent season down there.
Yeah, and you end up going to University of Maine, and obviously that's a pretty strong program. So you get drafted that year. Sean Walsh is the coach down there in University of Maine. And, you know, was that an important time for you as far as developing into your style of play? What would it look like?
Yeah, he was great. And so that program really, he put that program on the map. I mean, they were University of Maine was around in the late 70s, but when Walsh got there, you know, they took off. I wanted to go to University of Denver, and they brought me on a recruiting trip, and it was fantastic. That they were playing against, they were number one in the nation. They were playing against Brett Hull, and I think it was Minnesota Duluth, right? And it was just, the atmosphere was fantastic. They offered me a scholarship just before the game started, so I wanted to go to Denver. And Sean Walsh and my father talked me out of it. They talked me into going to the University of Maine. And as it turns out, University of Maine, by my junior year, we were actually ranked number one. But we had so many good players that really took off up there. And it was just, it was a great environment to be around. If anybody's ever seen a game, I mean, they haven't had the success here recently, but when I was around and in the early 90s, Paul Kariya was in there. It was phenomenal. And it was the number one thing to go see when you're up in that, and it's just a college town, and we would pack the place every night. So great atmosphere. It ended up being a terrific choice for me. I was glad that Sean Walsh and my father both got me out of it, talked me out of going to Denver, and it worked out great.
Bob Beers joins us for Storytime, a former NHLer and Bruins analyst now. Bob, you know, that last year in Maine, you had just a great year. I mean, 10 goals, 27 assists, and 37 points. You know, at that point, did you know that your career was going to go past college hockey and turn into a pro hockey, even though you were drafted by the Bruins a few years earlier?
Yeah, that kind of, you know, but see, we had a couple guys that left that year, and I don't know if you ever played with them or not, but Jack Capuano, who's an assistant coach in the NHL right now, and Eric Weinrich, who had a great career, a terrific career in the NHL, they left early. So they left after their junior year. Otherwise, I never got on a power play. So I was able to expand a little bit, get on the power play, and put up some offensive numbers anyhow. But it just that year, I kind of knew it. And, you know, Boston, one of the reasons, you know, my father wanted me to go to Maine is because we play, you know, a lot of our games in Boston, BU, BC, up and down the East Coast. And, you know, the Bruins had drafted me. It's a lot different back then where you don't have scouts everywhere. So they could come and watch me all the time, which they did. And, you know, I was kind of getting an indication that, you know, they were going to sign me after my senior year. So I was still a project, though. You know, I'd have to spend a lot of time in the minors before I could probably try to break through. But, you know, I kind of understood at that point that I had a good chance to make it.
Bob, we left off just as you were again set to leave the University of Maine after a very successful season and sign at the Boston Bruins. Is that a big moment? Like, how does that come to pass? Do you get a call and say, hey, we're signing you and move on? Or is there something more to it at that point in that time?
Yeah, no, it was, Looking back on it, it was called the Frozen Four, right? So you're in the Final Four, college hockey. We lost in the semifinals, but you still had to play a consolation game. So it was right after the consolation game was played, maybe a week after, less than a week actually, that the Bruins signed me. I played against Rod Brind'Amour that game, and he signed and he went right to the NHL. So, but I signed they had me come in for a couple practices. They were a really good team. So this is back in 89. And then I came in for a few practices. I was around for the first round of the playoffs, but I obviously didn't play. And then I went back to college to finish out my, senior year of college, there. So, but then this is the following year, 89-90 season that I started playing pro.
And when you walked in that dressing room the first time, did you ask Ray if you could wear 77, Ray Bourque, or was he pretty set on keeping it?
Yeah, the training, you know, Ray's, and I don't know what you know about him, he's just such a fantastic person. You know, he's the first guy to walk up to you, shake your hand, and he introduced himself. You know, I don't need to know who your name is. You know, I got to figure it out. But no, like, you know, we had a lot of characters on the team. And that 89-90 season, I mean, I spent most of it in the minors, but they were a very good team. Of course, they lost to Edmonton in the 90 finals. But just a lot of good characters, a lot of good people. And, you know, you were welcomed right away, being in that locker room and being part of the group. Even as a guy that was up and down, mostly down, until the end of the year, anyhow.
You know, you look at it, I think a lot of people never knew Cam Neely. His career wasn't super long, but maybe talk a little bit about what the big BC guy was like Cam Neely as a player and as a teammate.
Scary. You know, you see some of the things that he did when he played, and just, you know, that power forward, and if he dropped the gloves, he just the mean streak that he had, and I mean, he still has it. He's still so competitive, you know, as the president here of the Bruins. It's just, it's fun to watch. It's, you know, he'd love to be back on the ice. It's hard for him sometimes, I think. But no, really good teammate. You know, I mean, these guys were in, you know, I was brought up well in terms of when I went and played in the minors my rookie year. You know, you had a couple things that you were taught by some of the older players. You know, be early for practice, be the first one on, be the last one off, and keep your mouth shut. So that's what I did. And, you know, you listen to guys, you keep your mouth shut, you keep your head down and you play. And, you know, I know, you know, some teams are different than others, but, they were really welcoming to me, and Cam was right up there, you know, with the guys like that and all the things that he had accomplished. And he'd only been in, you know, he'd made his mark in a few years just being as a Bruins player. So, I mean, I looked up to all those guys. I watched them through college because I was drafted by them, and I was right in Maine, so we got all the games, you know. And so when I got in that locker room, you know, you're in awe. There's no question. You have to kind of get over that, knowing, okay, hey, you know, I've earned it. I deserve to be here. Now I got to play like it.
At that time, you know, you're trying to establish yourself as an NHL defenseman. What for you was some of the keys for you to make that happen? Was it like just learning the speed of the NHL, or what was it that was trying to unlock to make it easier for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I was 6'3", but I wasn't the toughest guy, and you know, I didn't do very well in fights. I got beat up plenty of times, but you know, I think when you were 6'3" back then, it's a little bit different than being that now. Like, you were expected to play that harder brand of hockey, and it took me a little while to learn that and to kind of get that. I mean, I had that in college a bit, but like I said, in the pros, it was kind of, I think I was just in awe a little bit, and it took me a couple years, you know. And I remember Ray, you know, telling me, look, you know, you go in the corner with certain guys, you know, you've got to make sure that you're doing it in a certain way. And these are just little lessons that, you know, guys would tell me along the way. So, you know, I tried to take all that and try to apply it as years went on. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but it was, that was for me the biggest learning experience. I think I could skate well enough. I mean, you know, my offensive, I didn't play very much in the power play with the Bruins because they had, Ray would play full 2 minutes over on that right point. So I didn't get that much time there, but, you know, just it had to learn some different parts of the game that maybe I wasn't prepared for.
And then eventually it traded from Boston to Tampa. And I'm guessing in that situation, your opportunity to show your offensive skills, that really exploded, that opportunity without Ray Bourque in your way?
Yeah. And you know, as a team that is in Tampa, that we didn't have any real expectations. It wasn't, just go out, work hard, and, we'll see where we end up. And nobody expected us to make the playoffs. That was the first season for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I got traded about a month into the season. I wasn't playing at all in Boston, so they traded me to Tampa. And you get on an expansion team and you get a little opportunity here and there, and all of a sudden things kind of explode for you. And I still had a pretty high minus, but which that's okay. That was going to be tough to avoid, but the offensive part, I was able to kind of get involved in that a little bit more.
And what was it like as Terry Crisp as your head coach down there in Tampa?
Oh God, Crispy never stopped yelling. I still tell stories to people about Terry Crispy's, some of the things that he said. You look back on it now, it was hilarious, but it was tough on. He was tough on some guys, yeah. And I remember Roman Hamrlick coming around the net, and Roman Hamrlick was an 18-year-old. He was a first overall pick, and he was coming around the net, and he tried to fire a pass up the middle, and Brett Hull was in the high slot, and he didn't even stop the puck. He one-timed it, and he one-timed it past I can't remember who was in net. It might have been Wendell Young, but. And I remember Terry Crisp coming down to the end of the bench and telling Wayne Cashman, who's our assistant coach, he said, "Cash, the search is over. They found somebody that can play with Hully. And they get him a puck. They found somebody that can play with Hully." It was just, he had Hamrlick in tears. I mean, but he was a fun guy. It just, he would tell us, "Look, I don't take it personal. I just get fired up, and that's my way of coaching. I yell." If he did that today's game, right? I don't know. With the things that have kind of changed in the NHL, I don't know how long he would last. He was great, though. I mean, I enjoyed him. He was entertaining.
Oh, that's for sure. Bob Beers joins us, longtime NHLer and now analyst for the Boston Bruins. You make your way to Edmonton in a trade for Chris Joseph. And again, another real offensive year underneath, Ted Green and maybe Glenn Sather in there with Dougie Wade and these types of guys. You had these big moments of offensive. What connected so well for you here with the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, I loved playing with Dougie Wade, and Freddie Olesen was my partner. Freddie could shoot the puck. He was a smart offensive player, smart player, period. So we played a lot together that season. And Dougie Wade would play on that. He would play the right wing half wall, and Freddie would play kind of up top, and I'd be over on the left wing circle. And Dougie was just so good at finding guys. So I think Dougie was on one power play. Jason Arnott was on another one. So when we kind of split time, Igor Kravchuk was on that other power play unit as a offensive kind of guy. So we had some good success there, and we didn't make the playoffs that season, but I enjoyed that year. That was an interesting trade because I had to come home and tell my wife, she's sitting in an air conditioned house in Tampa Bay with our newborn. that I got traded to Edmonton. And she was, I don't want to offend anybody. She just says, where is Edmonton? She just had no idea. You're going to find out. So, but I had a blast that year. I wish I could have spent more time in Edmonton. Slats had other ideas for me.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's funny. You look at what you've done, and you're happy with that season, and it doesn't maybe work out the way exactly you thought it was going to after that year.
No, so the following year, if you remember back, that was a lockout. That was what, 94, right? And I'd signed as a free agent with the Islanders. We came back after the lockout, and we had 1 week of practices before we were ready to play. And during one of those practices, I got hit in the eye with a puck, and I missed a significant amount of time with the Islanders. So I couldn't even start the season. I missed like the first 20 games, and we were only going to play 48. So, and it was a pretty significant injury. So it took me a while to get back. And then the following year, I didn't quite have it, and ended up down and playing in Utah for the. It was in the IHL.
And then eventually you do make your way back to Boston. Was it a nice place to kind of put things, you know, to have those few more games with Boston where you really kind of started, circle back and start again?
Yeah, we, you know, my wife is from here and we had a house here. We always kept the house here. So, you know, I kind of wanted to get back at some point. The situation worked out very well that I was able to come back. Unfortunately, we didn't have a very good season. We, you know, that team that I played on in 97, or 96, 97, I guess it was the reason that the Bruins got Joe Thornton, because we finished last, and Joe Thornton was the first overall pick the next year. So, yeah, it didn't work out that way, but I was happy to get back to Boston. And as it turns out, I ended up starting doing the radio the following year. So it did work out for the best.
Yeah, and that's what I want to finish off with, because, I mean, we're always wondering what we're going to do when players are playing. What's my after career look like? Did you always know you were going to get into the media? And then, you know, you mentioned it started at the radio. Did it escalate quite quickly for you from there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. I was hesitant. I had a couple offers, but they were two-way offers. So I ended up taking the job in 97, 98. Like I said, Joe Thornton's first year, Pat Burns' first year behind the bench. And but the whole year, I had the itch to keep playing. You know, I said, I can still play. You know, I can still play. I should be playing, even if it was in the minors, you know. And so I didn't play the first season I was doing the radio, but I went down to Providence and played the next season. So I was doing the radio for the Bruins, and then I would play part-time for the Providence Bruins. And Peter LaViolette was the coach down there, and I had a great relationship with him. So I would play part-time. And I only played, you know, a handful of games towards the end of the year, and then played in the playoffs. And we won a Calder Cup, so it was and I did that for two seasons.
Yeah.
There were days where I would do a Bruins game in the afternoon, and then play in Providence in the evening.
Oh, come on.
It didn't happen a lot, but it happened a couple of times. So I played two seasons down in Providence while I was doing the Bruins radio. But the Bruins radio has been, you know, great. The organization has gone through a lot of changes over the last, you know, 23 years that I've been in there. People that they have in now are just, you know, between Donnie Sweeney and Cam Neely, who are my teammates, and, you know, the whole coaching staff and the group of players that they have, it's a real good group. And I've really enjoyed my time, you know, doing the radio. But no, I never, to answer your question, no, I never really envisioned doing it. It just kind of, it was offered to me, and I decided to take a chance, and it's worked out.
Well, Bob, we really appreciate you sharing your storyline with us, and you know, I hope it's a long run for the Bruins. Who knows what's going to happen when this all shakes out?
I'm excited. I hope it's a long run for the Bruins and the Oilers. I'd love to see that in the finals.
Oh, it'd be great to see that talent for sure. Well, Bob, thanks again. We'll connect with you soon again when we get rolling.
I appreciate it. Thank you.